The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today we're tackling tachycardia with guest expert Dr. Ben Herwig of the Florida Heart Institute. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through health education. And for all those who are not aware, this March 27th, Saturday, March 27th, is our fifth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. It's at the Convention Center, Tampa Convention Center. It's absolutely free. And I'd like to run through the list of 22 seminars that we will have that day for your benefit. Here we go. Cardiac disease, colon cancer, cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancer, nutrition and cancer prevention, obesity in women, screening for breast cancer, migraines and headaches, fertility and family, menopause, bladder incontinence. That's just the morning. We also have osteoporosis, sleep disorders, breast cancer, reversing dry eye, healthcare and disease prevention for women, skin cancer, diabetes, raising your child without going crazy, allergies and asthma, gynecological cancer, what you need to know. Plus, we have a seminar on financial wellness. All 22 seminars that day. In addition to that, we have healthcare screenings, we have fitness classes, and chair massage. And again, everything is free. Please go to our website, focusonfemales.com, go to the registration tab, and register to reserve your seat in the seminars you wish to hear and attend. Okay, back to today's show. Once again, Dr. Ben Herwig is with us, and we're glad to have you here, Ben.
Thank you.
Dr. Herwig graduated from the University of Essen in Germany in 1988. He immigrated to the United States in 1991 and completed his postgraduate training in internal medicine, cardiovascular disease, and clinical cardiac electrophysiology in New York City. He graduated as an electrophysiologist from Montefiore Medical Center, the birthplace of cardiac pacing in the United States. He worked as a postdoctoral research scientist in the Department of Pharmacology at Columbia University in New York, performing research on atrial fibrillation and cardiac memory in animal models. During a 2-year tenure at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital Center in New York, he gained experience in advanced ablative therapy of atrial fibrillation. He was the director of the Electrophysiology and Arrhythmia Service at the University of South Florida from July 2002 to June 2008, as well as the founding director of the USF Cardiac Electrophysiology Fellowship Program from July 2006 to July 2008. Promoted to Associate Professor of Medicine in June 2007. Dr. Herwig has published 52 peer-reviewed journal articles, 16 book chapters, 45 abstracts, and monographs. He has presented and lectured at national and international meetings and is a highly experienced clinician and arrhythmologist. And again, it's our pleasure to have you here today as we tackle tachycardia, which I imagine in one shape or form everyone experiences at some time or another.
That's correct. Most of us at some point have accelerated heart rate or sensation of tachycardia, maybe just during a moment of anxiety, but most of the time it's harmless and does not require further evaluation or therapy.
So two questions. One, of course, if it is a, let's call it, say, a bad cause for your tachycardia, what, of course, can be the outcome of such a disease if it's unrecognized and not treated?
Well, the spectrum of symptoms goes from essentially having no symptoms at all to mild palpitations, to a sensation of tachycardia, to dizzy spells, and even in extreme cases, fainting spells or even sudden death.
Okay, so certainly this is something that is serious stuff, and I guess the key thing is to know when it's a serious problem and when it's simply an emotional or an anxiety issue. Can you give advice to the listener as to how to try and differentiate a serious cause of tachycardia, which potentially could lead to sudden death, versus a normal anxious moment or something similar to that?
Well, obviously, if somebody has dizzy spells or, you know, faints or threatens to faint or really faints, that definitely requires immediate evaluation. If people have a single episode of a sensation of an accelerated heart rhythm, I believe that you can wait and just see how it goes. And obviously, if this becomes a symptom that occurs over and over again, also that should be evaluated.
Okay. And how would you recommend the person to evaluate so-called palpitations, just an awareness of your heart? Let's say it's not a rapid rhythm. We should back up a little bit. What is a normal heart rate per minute?
Well, the normal heart rate should be well below 100 beats per minute.
We're talking about for adults.
Yeah. People who exercise a lot and are into marathon running may have heart rates in the 40s and 50s. I would say the average person lies between 60 and 80 beats per minute. Heart rates above 100 beats per minute are clearly defined as tachycardia and unusual.
So if a person is aware of their heart beating but it's not fast, is that a problem?
Well, it can be a problem. There are people who have arrhythmias like atrial fibrillation that are associated with the heart rate irregularities only. That means there is no tachycardia, no fast heart rate, but the heart rate is entirely irregular, and that definitely needs evaluation and therapy.
All right, so if someone is persistently aware of their heart beating, they feel it beating in their chest, they should have it evaluated.
Oh, I would definitely recommend that.
Okay. All right, and now I want to take a moment and just to remind everybody that we are broadcasting live at this moment, and to call in with your questions about your heart, about potential symptoms that you're experiencing, any awareness of your heart rate, irregularity of your heart rate. And the number to call in is 289-1860. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County, you want to call toll-free 877-969-8600. One more time, 877-969-8600. Okay, now, Ben, before the break, let's go over some normal conduction of the heart. What generates the normal heartbeat? Where is that located? And how it initiates that heartbeat to involve the entire four chambers of the heart?
Well, the normal rhythm is generated in an area of the right top chamber. It's called the sinus node. It's essentially the pacemaker every one of us has. An area of cells that make spontaneous depolarization and activity. That's where our heart rhythm is generated. Then the impulses essentially conduct down from the top chambers down to the lower chambers with a delay that's created in an area which we call the AV node. And then a specialized conduction system spreads the electrical activity throughout the main chambers in the heart. All of these elements can be affected by a disease or abnormalities and are important.
And the idea between a conduction system is that the heart, the four heart chambers must beat in synchrony with each other, correct?
That's absolutely right. Important is that the top chambers contract before the main chambers at critical time intervals. And it's also very important that the main chambers contract fairly simultaneously and not dissynchronously or asymultaneously as in some diseases.
And, of course, the main chambers, for those listeners who are not familiar, the main chambers you're referring to are the ventricles. And then, of course, the chambers on the top of the heart would be the atrium.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And let's, if we can, so we talked a little bit about would you define tachycardia, therefore, as a heart rate then greater than the 80 beats per minute?
I would say greater than 100 beats per minute.
All right. And when we talk about a heart rate, we're actually talking about the rate that the ventricles, the main chamber of the ventricles, beat then, not the atrium, correct?
Yeah, that's an important point. There are abnormalities or diseases where the top chambers contract very rapidly, but the main chambers essentially may be at normal rates, oftentimes irregular, and that's atrial fibrillation. So you do not need tachycardia to have an arrhythmia in the top chambers of the heart. That would usually manifest with an irregular or heart rate.
Okay, that's a very good point. And let's go on to talk a little bit about the causes of tachycardia. Let's talk about the non-cardiac cause of tachycardia first, if you would.
Well, everybody can get anxious or excited, in some situations in life. It can occur during emotional upset or simply doing exercise. We have hormones in the body like adrenaline that get released during exercise or when we're anxious or get excited, and those hormones tend to increase heart rate.
And how about, for example, thyroid patients?
Also patients with thyroid disease who have hyperthyroidism, overfunction of the thyroid gland, can have tachycardia. That's correct. It's a little bit overrated, but it certainly can affect tachycardia.
So when you evaluate a patient for the first time, is a thyroid hormone level part of a routine screening to understand all components of an individual's tachycardia?
I believe that's correct, yes. Particularly in people who are older, I would definitely check the thyroid hormone, make sure there's no hyperthyroidism.
Is there any other test aside from a basic CBC and, say, chemistries that one would look in addition to the thyroid? Or is that predominantly it?
Not really. Arrhythmias are electrical phenomena, and people can have completely normal laboratory profiles and still have arrhythmias.
And how about the nutritional, the caffeine? The patient is, for example, an asthmatic patient on albuterol, which can have an effect on the heart. Mm-hmm. How frequently do you see these? Again, I'm going to call them extracardiac factors that can impact the heart rate.
I think that's very frequent. People who have asthma or chronic obstructive lung disease and who take these inhalers, they're called beta-2 agonists, they're basically similar hormones like adrenaline, they can make the heart beat fast, and a lot of these patients tend to run heart rates in the 110, 120 beat per minute range. Those are usually people who have more advanced lung disease and use these medications quite frequently.
Okay, so again, and we're covering basically at this point the non-cardiac causes that can impact the heart rate and could potentially be a more benign way to control a heart rate that is accelerated or it's become too fast. All right, when we come back from the break, we're going to focus more in on cardiac abnormalities as a cause of tachycardia. And once again, call in with your questions at 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now, in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
With so much confusion about Medicare these days, it's good to have someone with clear answers. With WellCare, it's all about getting the Medicare Advantage plan that's right for you. You'll get the same coverage as original Medicare, plus lots of extra benefits and a choice of great doctors in the Tampa Bay area. There's no obligation, just straight talk about your options. Call 1-866-907-6682 to find out about our great events near you. Now's the time to get a new Medicare health plan. So call 1-866-907-6682 today. That's 1-866-907-6682. 1-866-907-6682. Get the Medicare you deserve. You've earned it. You deserve it. That's the WellCare way.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're tackling tachycardia, rapid heartbeat, with guest expert, Dr. Bent Herwig, cardiologist from the Florida Heart Institute. And we have two callers on the line. First, we're going to take Kim. And Mary, we know you're there from Sarasota. We'll take you right after Kim. Kim from St. Pete, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help you today?
Lost my job, so I lost my insurance, so I lost my cardiologist. For the last 8 years, every month, about once a month, my heart rate goes to 250 out of nowhere and gets stuck. I had an ablation, didn't work. They said I have AVNRT, AV node reentry tachycardia. I've managed to fix it myself and not have to get adenosine shots anymore by standing on my head. The blood gets back to my heart. And I do this once a month, and it stops the fast heart rate immediately. I was wondering, since I can't afford to go back to a doctor, I'm just wondering why this works so someone told me to do it and it does work. Do you think I might have a pulmonary embolism or something that's moving like a blood clot? So when I stand on my head, it fixes the heart rate.
Okay, well, let's first, Ben, if you could, describe AV node reentry tachycardia. And we already discussed how the heart rate is initiated at the sinus node, which is part of the right atrium, and then it is delayed through the AV node before it gets into the ventricles. So would you describe this AV node reentry tachycardia?
Correct.
Yeah, the AV node is the central part of the conduction system in the heart that creates the necessary delay between the top and lower chamber contraction. Now, the AV node usually consists of a single pathway that conducts down, but in some people there are functional pathways that conduct with different electrical properties, and for that reason, tachycardias can develop where the electrical impulse conducts down via one pathway and up via the other one, and that creates a tachycardia where the ventricles and the atrium contract at the same time usually. It's a quite a frequent problem. It has a female predominance, and it can today be very successfully treated by a catheter ablation procedures, which is considered first-line therapy for this problem. And what we essentially do during these procedures is we provoke these tachycardias, induce them, map them, that means characterize exactly what the mechanism is, and then move a catheter to one of the two pathways and try to essentially modify that pathway in a way that the tachycardia is not longer inducible or provocable. It's very unfortunate to hear that your procedure failed.
Yes, it was too close to the AV node. He didn't want to get any closer. He might have done some damage when he was mapping it. So anyway, they said the only thing that can solve it is a pacemaker, and I don't want to do that right now. I'm a little young for that. But I stand on my head whenever it goes to 240, 250, and it works. It goes away immediately. And it used to have to get adenosine shots to make it go away. So I'm just wondering, do you think that I might have some kind of blood clot somewhere, something that might be causing this? Because I heard that tachycardia can be caused by pulmonary embolisms or something.
In other words, some other cause of the tachycardia, in addition to the AVNRT?
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure out why standing on my head makes the tachycardia go away instantly. And I get about anywhere from 220 to 250 a minute. That's what I've been recorded on my EKGs when I go in ambulances. But for the last 2 years, I've been able to stand on my head, and I don't have to call ambulances anymore. It happens every 3 or 4 weeks.
It's quite typical what you're describing there. These tachycardias are oftentimes can be terminated by maneuvers such as bearing down or coughing or putting the head under cold or water or other maneuvers just as you described. The fact that you still have the arrhythmia after the ablation procedure, the rate you're describing, 250 beats per minute, and I take it that the rhythm is irregular, is very typical for this arrhythmia, and I don't believe that you have any other coexisting condition. Pulmonary embolism is associated with atrial fibrillation, but there's nothing here that is otherwise indicative of pulmonary embolism. I believe that you have the same problem you had before, and your first procedure failed. By the way, I think that still the best treatment for this condition is a second ablation procedure that should be successful probably in more than 90% of cases.
Exactly. They told me 98%, and I went to Deborah Heart and Lung Hospital in New Jersey to have it done. But anyway, all right.
I was going to hang on a second, Kim. Ben, I was going to ask you, Kim mentioned that the conduction abnormality is so close to the node itself, I guess, that there was they were unsuccessful. Have you had that experience? If the abnormal circuit is so close to the node, it's difficult to ablate it without damaging the node.
Well, AV nodal reentry tachycardia by definition involves the AV node. So any type of ablation procedure actually, you ablate very, very close to the node, in the area right next to the node. So that's the nature of the beast. It's a procedure that essentially is associated with the risk of complete heart block, that means complete conduction block between top and lower chambers in about 2% of cases. The rate of damage there may be higher using radio frequency energy than using cryo energy.
And we'll be right back with more and finish Bent's answer, Dr. Herwig's answer, in just a short break. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Kim.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Three more survivors pulled from beneath the rubble in Port-au-Prince today. The UN says since Tuesday's magnitude 7 earthquake struck Haiti, rescue workers have saved more than 70 people. While that's a small number compared to a death toll that could top 100,000, the UN says it's unusually high given the conditions. While many Haitians are still waiting for food and water, authorities are making progress in distribution of relief aid. The Haitian government has now set up 14 distribution points for supplies, and the U.S. Army is helping. Help might not come fast enough, though, for some 85 elderly residents of a damaged nursing home in Port-au-Prince. It's only a mile from the airport, but has no food and water. One man has died already. With a 60th Senate vote at stake, President Obama is headed to Boston this afternoon to campaign for the Democratic candidate in Massachusetts' special election, Martha Coakley. She's in a tight race with Republican Scott Brown. This is SRN News.
Senator Harry Reid has apologized for referring to Barack Obama as light-skinned.
He's apologized.
And for using an N-word.
Recognizing that he didn't use appropriate language.
What would happen if a Republican senator said what Senator Reid said?
The president, because of political expediency, has given a pass to bigotry, racism, and just unadulterated ignorance.
Now, more than ever, making no apologies.
Either way, he will not be the leader in 2011.
Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show.
Before we let you go, any last words for the adults listening to this radio show tonight from a 16-year-old?
Just please make sure your kids know what it's all about and they stay away from it, because it's not fun going to the funeral. Thank you so much for having me talk. I really hope that I could have saved some lives tonight.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show. Sunday nights at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr.
Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Mary, if you're there from Sarasota, give us a call back, and we can take your call now. In the meantime, last thoughts about Kim, Dr. Herwig. What if she were in your hands, what would you do at this point to try and break through on this problem for her?
Well, I would recommend to do a second procedure to carefully remap this tachycardia and to make sure that we're not dealing with something awkward, like sometimes there are accessory pathways that are close to the AV node that can very much look like an AV node reentrant tachycardia, but have to be ablated in a different fashion. We also have different energy sources available to perform these type of ablation procedures. We can use heat that's usually delivered by radio frequency energy, but we can also use a cold cryo energy where we basically cool down the catheter to a minus 80 degrees with liquid nitrogen. Now, the advantage of cold energy is that we can actually get very close to vital structures such as the AV node or the conduction system and ablate quite safely in these regions of the heart. So my recommendation is a second procedure, careful diagnostic study, and then ablation. It should be successful.
Very good. All right. And let's see. We have a couple calls coming in. In the meantime, let's answer a couple quick questions. Can tachycardia be inherited?
Well, definitely. There are certain arrhythmias that run in families. We know today, for example, that atrial fibrillation is an arrhythmia that oftentimes, several generations in one family, different people have the same tachycardia. One of the most notorious arrhythmias known for inheritance is the so-called long QT syndrome, a condition where certain intervals on the electrocardiograms are prolonged. The long QT syndrome is an arrhythmia that can kill people. The arrhythmia that those people get is called torsade de pointe, and it's a real dangerous condition. The long QT syndrome is inherited. There is a genetic form, then there's an acquired form. Even the acquired form, where people take certain medications that provoke the condition, is also inherited.
And let me stop you right here because we have Sharon from Bradenton. Let's take your call, Sharon from Bradenton, and then move on to Arthur. Sharon, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Sharon, welcome to the Sharon, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you. I have a quick question for you, Doctor. In 2008, I had a stress test done. I am 38 years old. And I basically don't understand my results because I'm still having, I don't know if it's palpitation, but sometimes, you know, it happens every month that all of a sudden I'm sitting, I could just sit and watch television and I just feel my heart just beat really fast. I kind of lose breath and then, you know, I do have dizzy spells and stuff like that. And I'm holding my echocardiogram. I have abnormal ECGs and it said sinus rhythm with sinus arrhythmia. And it says infarct or something possible, anterior infarct. And I didn't understand what...
Infarct?
Infarct, right. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't even understand what that is. The findings were, it says the valve, there's a trivial aortic valve insufficiency. And it says there is trivial mitral and tricuspid valve regurgitation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just reading, you know, some of the, the results that I had for you. So I didn't understand what does all this mean.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you have cardiac valve difficulty problems as well as an infarct. You're 38 years old?
Yes.
Any family history of heart disease?
Yes, my mom had a heart attack when she was 45, and my grandfather passed away at 60.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have, you know.
Do you smoke? Do you smoke
cigarettes? No, I don't. But I am overweight. I'm 156, and I'm 5'1". So I do, and you know, all the weight's into my midsection.
How's your cholesterol?
I do have high cholesterol, along with I do have a PCOS, polycystic ovaries. So that also raises. I was understood that my cholesterol. So my cholesterol was 212. The total is 212.
Right. And how's your blood pressure?
My blood pressure is fine.
You tend to have normal blood pressure, not
medications? Yeah, normal blood pressure, right.
Okay, so we have, Ben, we have so a woman with findings of a valve deficiency, a possible infarct, overweight, strong family history of heart disease. Where do you go with this?
Well, we have to be careful. What she has done, she's just read us the reports. The valve insufficiency that was described here was labeled trivial or mild. You know, that's typical on echo reports. Also, the electrocardiogram is a test, you know, where lead placement is critical. So we have to be very careful to jump to premature conclusions. I think that your symptoms in a 38-year-old female who is obese and you know, they could be very consistent with maybe atrial fibrillation or another tachyarrhythmia or another fast, you know, heart rhythm disorder. And I think that you need a workup for this. What I would do with a patient like you is I would put an event monitor on, like a monitor you can wear for 2 or 3 weeks.
Right. And, the halter. I wore a 24 halter monitor, and the conclusion was sinus rhythm, benign atrial and ventricular ectopy.
Ectopy.
Yeah. You know, the Holter monitor may not be sufficient to catch this arrhythmia. 24 hours may not be enough of a time interval to really catch the problem you are describing there. Mm-hmm. So a 3-day event monitor is probably much more likely to lead to success there.
I see. Okay, and what about, because I remember when he did call, he said that how there was slight polarization. What exactly does that mean?
Slight what?
Polarization. Polarizing.
Well, they probably referred to a repolarization problem on the ECG. You know, as I said before, you have to be very careful. You're reading there a you know, maybe a computer read ECG report. You know, I don't want to jump to any premature conclusions here on the basis of these test results you're reading here. You're 38 years old. In general, 38-year-old people are not that sick. And I think we have to be very critical before we jump to any conclusions.
Okay, yeah, because normally when I my EKGs are always abnormal, so I don't know if that's, you know.
Well, there may very well be a problem. And,
you do have the strong family history, so.
Right.
So what is the plan at this point as far as following this up?
Well, basically I've been, you know, the diet and exercising 30 minutes a day, you know. I start slowly until I can work my way up, you know. But so you recommend that I do go back to the cardiologist and try to do a 3-day Holter monitor just to see?
Is that what you should ask for, Ben, a 3-day or a 3-week?
Well, I would go right to a 3-day event monitor because it's more likely to lead to a, you know, to successful documentation of the rhythm abnormality she has. And then further steps can be taken.
How frequently do you get this abnormality in your chest, your heart?
Probably once a week. So, like I said, I'm sitting and all of a sudden I feel like it's all I can say is like a palpitation. All of a sudden I feel the heartbeat like do do, and I kind of lose my breath, you know.
So maybe she should have a week or 2 week long.
The event monitor is usually 3 weeks. With a 3-day halter, you're very likely to miss this.
Maybe you should request a longer monitoring.
It's called a vent monitor?
Event monitor, yeah, cardiac event monitor. It's a device basically, you know, that automatically activates itself should there be a rhythm abnormality. But there's also the option then to press a button when you have symptoms, and it makes a recording.
Okay.
And that's retrograde even, you know, it basically goes backwards too in time. And that is a very elegant way to document rhythm abnormalities.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Let us know how it goes, and be sure to attend our symposium here in March, March 27th,
yes,
on a Saturday.
Okay.
You can go online and read all about it and join us.
I'm on there now, yeah.
Good for you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And let's go to Mary in Sarasota. Arthur, we know you're there. We'll be right with you next. Mary in Sarasota, I'm glad we were able to get you back on the line.
Yes, thank you very much. I have a recent thing that happened. I just didn't feel very well, and I but I didn't. My heart didn't hurt or anything, and I was up walking around my house just a little, and my pulse was 148, and I sat down and just kept taking my pulse, and it did go down later. And then I was at a store the other day, and I was walking around, and I use a cart, you know, to hold on to. I'm 75 years old.
Okay.
And so I was going slowly, holding the cart, and I felt that way again. And I went to sit down, and my pulse was just 100, but I still didn't feel well. I did breathing exercises, the slow breathing, the breathing in and then out, and I started feeling better, but it took quite a long time. But as far as I felt nothing in my chest, but my eyes felt funny. I did have a period of fainting a while back. I went to a heart doctor. I think it's been about 10 months ago, and everything checked out fine. He did extensive stuff, so I think he did everything he could. I suppose something could happen between now and then. And I do have polycystic kidney disease. I'm in stage 5, and I think it's not going to be very long before I'll be going on dialysis. So I don't ever know what kind of doctor I need to go to. So is this a heart doctor, or do I go to the kidney doctor? Do I go to my general practitioner?
Let's start at the beginning. 10 months ago, you were evaluated by a cardiologist, and everything was found to be okay regarding your heart?
Yes, I had fainted, and my general primary care doctor thought I needed to go to a heart doctor.
So how did they explain the fainting spell? The cardiologist, how did he explain it?
I had been put on a monitor before where they had me, I don't have my paperwork with me, but they made me unconscious, and I was found that I had syncope or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, they put you on a table, and they give you medication intravenously until you finally become unconscious.
Was it a catheterization?
It's a tilt table test, what we're talking about.
Yeah. And so at that time, they put me on a blood pressure medication that just made me terribly sick. And then they took me off of it and didn't give me anything else. My blood pressure seemed to be fine. So these episodes seem to happen for no reason. And I never can know in the morning how I'm going to feel a few hours later. But this, I never had been checking my pulse particularly when I felt bad. But this time I did, so I can't honestly know whether it had been fast.
Let me ask you a question. Is your pulse regular or irregular when you're going 140?
Regular.
It's regular.
It was. Mm-hmm. I was just feeling it with my hand, but I did listen with a stethoscope, and I don't really know enough, but it sounded, it didn't sound irregular to me. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what I think here, you are 75 years old, you have advanced kidney disease, you know, a syncope in a patient like yourself is a very concerning thing, and it always, there's always something that causes it, and we have to basically figure out what causes that. It's very important. That cannot be just like, you know, left in the dark. What I would suspect here is probably something we call a tachy-Brady syndrome. Tachy means fast, tachycardia, right? And then we have bradycardia, that's slow. Tachy-Brady means that patients at times go fast, and then at other times they go slow. And, you know, when they go fast, they have palpitations and tachycardia symptoms, and when they go slow, they may faint. And that's a very common cause of syncope, and it can be aggravated by some of the medications you take.
Yeah.
So what I think you need here is, you know, further diagnostic workup. You probably also need an event monitor, which we just recommended in the...
Yeah, I wrote that down. Of course, they'll tell me, but...
Yeah.
I need to go to back to a heart doctor then?
Yeah, you probably should go back to a cardiologist or your cardiologist and, you know, discuss with him the new symptoms, which are concerning and... What about your echocardiogram? Was that normal, the ultrasound of the heart?
Yes, everything turned out fine.
Mm-hmm.
And except for when they did the tilt table study, they did find something wrong, and they put me on the blood pressure medication. I don't know why when they stopped it, why they said then I didn't need any blood pressure medication. But since the last time I fainted, I was put down. on another.
Yeah. So you had a positive tilt table test. The tilt table test is a test that evaluates patients who may have what we call neurocardiogenic syncope. That means a condition that's caused by a reflex between nervous system and heart. You don't need any structural heart disease to have these type of reflexes. They're basically exaggeration of a normal response. Usually these events occur when you're standing upright.
That's correct. When I'm down or lying down, I usually feel the best. And, of course, I don't want to be doing that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, you had an abnormal tilt. That doesn't mean that you cannot have any other condition at the same time. You could have both conditions.
Right.
So this needs to be further evaluated.
So it is, I do need to call the heart doctor then.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, and you don't think it's anything to do with the kidney disease?
Well, not directly, but obviously patients with kidney disease, you know, they oftentimes have a constant fluid overload in the body, and they may also have high blood pressure, and then those patients sometimes have a hypertensive heart disease. That means, you know, the heart muscle is thickened as a result of chronically elevated blood pressures, and, you know, those patients are much more sensitive to what we just discussed, you know, and they typically also get atrial fibrillation and sinus node dysfunction, you know, and Tacky-Brady syndrome, what I just talked about.
Right.
So that would fit very well into this, you know, constellation of problems here.
And should I have gone to the hospital with that pulse of 148, or is that... Was that all right just to wait it out?
Well, you know, if you have a fall episode as a 75-year-old female and break your hip, that would be very unfortunate. So in that respect, sometimes it's smart to go to the hospital because the problem gets addressed immediately, you know, without further delays. What we want to avoid here is you falling and taking harm, yeah? So this is not something that should be just taken easily. This has to be evaluated.
So she should call her cardiologist in the morning.
I would say so.
I will do that. Thank you ever so much.
Mary, don't forget about our event coming up, our symposium on March 27th. We have people coming up from Sarasota. You'll love it. Bring your friends. That's March 27th. You can learn about it on focusonfemales.com.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet. Arthur, welcome. Come to us on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Arthur, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your patience and for joining us today on a Sunday.
It's been very informative. I'm glad to do it.
Well, appreciate it. And you are a patient of Dr. Herwig's.
Yes, I am.
Tell us about your situation. When did you develop your cardiac difficulties?
Well, it revolved around the aftermath of a significant sailing accident that I had back in '98, and I had open heart surgery due to a blockage or two, and then after the open heart surgery, as I understand often happens, I developed atrial fibrillation. Sometime about 6 months after open heart surgery, up in Jacksonville, Mayo, where I was being treated at the time because of my corporate medical care that I was getting, they installed a biventricular defibrillator, was implanted, and with a 3-lead one, and that didn't do anything for me, and they didn't do anything for me at all up in Jacksonville, and Dr. Herwig was recommended to me by a fellow that had been working at Mayo up in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And Dr. Herwig found that the leads were not correctly placed, that one of the leads wasn't correctly placed, and that I would probably be better off not being paced.
Mm-hmm.
And he upgraded my device and recalibrated and so forth, and also gave me two sessions of cardioversion, which pretty much took care of most of the AFib. I was never very symptomatic as far as AFib is concerned, and I'm 77, but I'm extremely active. Like, I still ride motorcycles, I still sail, I still work hobby around 10 or hours a day or whatever. So that's my motivation, is to remain very active at my age and continue. And the cardioversion was pretty successful. And then the recalibrating the instrument was also successful, and I have one that, where I can be monitored from my own bedroom, And generally, generally speaking, I have very, the device is able to tell when I have atrial fib, which I'm not symptomatic of anymore, and I don't have much of it. So it's kind of a success story, very active kind of a thing.
Well, that's great, Arthur. I have a question for you and for Dr. Herwig. The boating accident was in 98, and then during your recovery period or evaluation from the boating accident, it was found that you had blocked coronary arteries. Is that correct?
Not exactly. The boating accident resulted in paralysis of a leg and a lot of traction and a lot of sitting around. I wasn't able to lay in bed and so forth. I had to be sitting upright for a long period of time. And I gained weight, and then as a result of a normal physical, some 6 or 7 months later, they found that I did have blockages because of abnormality in the heartbeat is what triggered the investigation.
All right, and those blockages were unrelated to the boating accident, correct?
It was. My guess is that it was related to my inactivity. And gaining weight because of being quite active to just sitting for 6 months.
Well, Arthur had developed coronary disease, probably a process that took 30 years to develop, maybe the whole life. He presented with almost no symptoms, but the disease was picked up during his physical, and then further diagnostic tests basically led to a heart catheterization. Then the decision was made to do bypass surgery, and then he developed perioperative atrial fibrillation, a condition that often occurs when people have bypass surgery, and essentially continued on to have atrial fibrillation. And then a device was implanted, which was not even indicated, and one of the leads was not positioned in the right position in the heart, which led actually more to harm than good. And what we did essentially is just reprogram his device and converted him to a normal rhythm, and optimized his medical therapy a little bit, and he has done extremely well since then. Interesting about his story is that his atrial fibrillation was essentially asymptomatic, and if he wouldn't have discovered this, he could have basically suffered slow progression of his underlying heart disease, further deterioration of his pump function, and even a stroke if we would not have. So
it's a good thing that this was discovered. Because again, and I don't know if you have a number for us, for our listeners, the frequency of asymptomatic atrial fibrillation.
Well, it's quite frequent. I would say, that there are almost more asymptomatic patients than symptomatic patients who have AFib.
Okay, we are getting ready to wrap up. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Ben Herwig. Of course, Arthur, thank you for sharing your story today with us and our listeners. Ben, last thoughts on tachycardia for our listeners before we end the show.
Well, important to understand is not every tachycardia is caused by the same mechanism. There are probably 20 or 30 different tachycardia mechanisms. Some of the tachycardias which come from the main chambers of the heart, and particularly those that are associated with structural disease of the heart, are extremely dangerous, and they need aggressive evaluation.
Okay,
so if you have coronary disease, a heart attack in the past, you need to go to a doctor and have your problem evaluated.
Diagnostics are key, always. Proper diagnostic evaluation. Okay, this is Dr. Steve Maskin thanking each and every one of you for joining us today. Next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we are tackling breast cancer screenings. Screening for breast cancer with Dr. Tracy Holmey. In the meantime, have a great week, have a healthy week, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Bye-bye.